I was shot out of a cannon anyway this morning, so I am so excited for a show. But you start off with that music. Man, great, great stuff. Super Makembe, correct? Yeah. All right. I'm getting a nod of approval. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Welcome to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you all with us today on this Thursday, the 16th of April. A delight to have you with us. Let us get together, talk about what's happening in the world, and try to console one another. That is what we try to do each day here on the roundtable panel. We have a wonderful group to do it this morning. I'm very happy. Let us begin. I welcome the one, the only, Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
It's only me and my twin brother, Lewis, but I'm only here alone.
Well, it's great to have you. Thank you very much, as always. Rosemary Armeo is here. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
I'm very excited because I'm on with Linda Ellerbe. I can't believe it. She's a longtime idol.
Linda Ellerbe is, I think I said to you in a note that I wrote to you yesterday, that the 1985 me, if you had told me in 1985 that I was going to have Linda Ellerbe on our little talk show, I couldn't believe it. I wouldn't have been able to comprehend that.
What he actually said was, can you believe she's doing our dorky little talk show with us? But Linda Ellerbe.
I'm listening.
I know you're listening. I know you're listening.
Rosemary, I was just thinking, this is the first time that you and I have been on together, isn't it? I've listened to you for a very long time, but I don't think you and I have actually been on the show at the same time, have we?
No.
Well, that's great.
I didn't think so.
All right.
But again, there's always the possibility that we have, and I cannot remember it.
No.
This happens more and more frequently.
Well, I want people to know that Linda Ellerbe was the first person in journalism, maybe not the first, but you certainly did it the best, to make really difficult, hard, boring topics stories. You made them interesting. And then to double down on that, you began telling these stories to children. I think it's amazing, and I think you changed journalism for the better.
She is a Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist. We are thrilled to have her. Linda Ellerbe, good morning. Thank you very much for being with us once again. We love having you here.
Good morning. And it's as always, it's wonderful to be on your dorky little talk show.
And
I never said that.
And the Dean of College of Emergency Preparedness, he gave us a scare last week because he was sick, but he's better now. He's the Homeland Security Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. Bob Griffin, how are you, sir?
Joe, it is wonderful to be back. And people who sent me emails last week inquiring about me, I really appreciate that. And I certainly fulfill the dorky element of the dorky and small, and trying to get to the small piece, but I've got a little bit of a ways to go. So glad to be back.
It's wonderful to have you back. We've got a lot to talk about in your bailiwick of things to try to understand of what's happening in the world. So let us begin, shall we, with just some sense of what is going on, and I'll begin with the big story that came out of the press briefing yesterday, which is the president threatening to ultimately, and this is interesting, and I want everyone's input on this one. This one is for the group, but the question is, the president threatens to adjourn Congress to get his nominees, but likely would be impeded by Senate rules. But he still is threatening to adjourn Congress to make these appointments. This was a announcement he made yesterday afternoon during the press briefing, threatening to try to force Congress to adjourn so he could fill his administration's vacancies without Senate approval, the second time this week that he has claimed unprecedented executive authority amid the coronavirus pandemic. Alan Chartok, we'll begin with you.
Well, it's a scary, it's consistently scary when this guy gets up there and starts to act like a dictator. Now, does he have the constitutional authority to do it? He does. It's in the Constitution. He's able to to do this, but in fact, it is a norm breaker, like all the other norm breakers that he has done. And if you take it in the context of everything else he's said and tried, then you know that what he's trying to do is to become a dictator. It's that simple.
So on Monday, you say you have total control. And then yesterday, you say this. Bob Griffin.
I'm in complete agreement with what Alan said. And while it is in the Constitution, I'm not sure that his capacity to adjourn Congress right now it is actually valid. And I think this is going to be a decision that the courts make. And to follow up on Alan's comments, you know, I was disgusted when I heard it. But McConnell has fed this rabid skunk. Okay, he ignored the fact that this guy has sprayed all over the Constitution and Congress, and now the rabid skunk has bit him. And you know, karma's a bugger. And there's part of me that says that this would be, just revenge for what McConnell has done. But at the same time, it affects us so badly. It's also, if I could toss this out for both Linda and Rosemary, this whole thing reeks of desperation. It's desperation in the sense that he's recognizing that the ship is sinking, and he's trying to find ways to deflect criticism of his failed coronavirus response and really trying to stuff his nominees through.
Linda Ellerbe.
Well, I don't know about Rosemary, but I know my own feeling, and you just hit on it. This is yet more deflection. We are talking about a man who sees it going down the tubes. He's going down in the election, and I believe he pretty well knows this at this moment. And then you have the cornered rat syndrome. How many of us is he willing to take down with him? Add to that the coronavirus, and gee, just imagine. We used to just wonder if he was going to declare war on North Korea. Now it's the whole world that's sick. It's a perfect storm for Trump in the sense that he is – it's the perfect meltdown for Trump. I think our needs at this point need to be worried about, though it's almost impossible, what is he going to do next? What is he going to try next to deflect? And I confess that when it comes to being a prophet on this, I am useless, because there is nothing that I would have predicted that this man was going to do next that he hasn't already done next.
Rosemary.
Okay, so I have an alternative theory. I think he knows damn well he can't do this. While it's in the Constitution, it's never been used before. So like the Emoluments Clause, it'll take court action to resolve it. And the clause is clear that there has to be a disagreement between the two sides on when to adjourn. The House isn't going to adjourn. Nancy Pelosi's not going to allow that to happen. So I think this whole thing is a ploy for two things. One is it's put pressure on the Senate to get through some of his nominees. He wants a new VOA director so he can take over propaganda machinery, and he wants the new head of national security. I bet McConnell will be working on that so he gets what he wants. And second, I think he has his lawyers going all over Article 2 looking for ways to see how he can control Congress, because it's part of the ongoing recrimination after impeachment. They went after him, and now he's going after them. It's classic Trump. And I don't think at all that he sees himself losing. I think he loves when he's the underdog. He tries to put himself into that position all the time. And in fact, what we're seeing across the country right now is helping him. We have people going out in cars and sometimes in crowds without masks protesting stay-at-home orders, which, of course, he has ordered. But he now gets to blame the governors for the part of the policy that he's put into place they don't even like. I think he's setting us up again.
You're talking about it in these what's happening in Michigan. There was a huge
this all over the country now.
Yes, there was. There was a huge one in Michigan yesterday. That obviously, as the Washington Post says, exposes the complicated politics of these shutdowns. Alan, then, I mean, to Linda's point of, you know, what do you do next? I mean, how long can you bob and weave and deflect?
I think what happens is that as things continue to get worse, as Linda's excellent point goes, and by the way, I don't agree with any of you about this being a lowly, you know, third class, small radio station. We're huge.
No, I didn't say the radio station.
Not the radio station. It's Joe's program.
Yeah, just my own. It's just me, actually.
This is
you're not
huge.
Looking as dorky as the compliment that I see it to be.
it is what I am, so I just live with it.
Right, I am what I am.
All right, I live with Rolf. I've accused him for years of wearing a mental pocket protector.
As Popeye would say.
All the smart girls know to fall in love with the nerds.
All right.
Well, yes, I've experienced that. So,
thanks for bringing that up, Alan. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, but I do think that we're on the target. His numbers are going down. He's going to lose the election. He's scared to death about that. He doesn't want to be held accountable after he's not president anymore of some of the despicable things that he's done. You know, the idea that he is, on the one hand, saying everybody should wear a mask in the right situation, and on the other, encouraging the nut fringe in Michigan and other places. It's incredible that we are where we are. Every day I wake up, my wife Roselle has a wonderful cup, and it says, I can't stand waking up in the morning and knowing that Trump is the president. And that's where we are. Linda is exactly right. I mean, who could have ever thunk any of it?
Joe, can I jump in on the Michigan piece,
yes,
though?
Yes, please.
And while there are elements of Michigan's shutdown policy that I absolutely disagree with, like the idea that you can't travel to a second home that you may have in Michigan, I look at the Michigan situation as really part of the presidential election. And you know, look at the DeVos family is funding this thing. This isn't just a pop-up of angry Americans exercising their constitutional freedom. This is about politics, and they're purposely trying to go and embarrass a Democratic governor who could potentially be a vice presidential candidate, and they recognize that, and they also recognize that Michigan is going to be one of the key states that determines that could determine the election. So I really think it has more to do with presidential politics than it has to do with anything about the coronavirus.
I don't know how you could say that, Bob. He tweeted that it is Gretchen half Whitmer is in way over her head, doesn't have a clue, and likes blaming everyone for her own ineptitude. Rosemary.
Well, his rhetoric towards any powerful woman is disgusting, and it holds forth with Governor Whitmer. But I could. I'm tempted to agree with Bob, except that these protests are spreading nationwide, and the connection between DeVos and the protests, the DeVos family or its money and the protests, seems to be conspiratorial at this point. There's no real evidence of it. So whether it was started by them, by smart operatives they paid for, it's now spreading. And it does tap into the incredible building, cabin fever, let's get back to the economy, pro-Trump stuff that has been there all along, that this has all been overhyped. No one I know, or not that many people I care about anyway, are dead. And so therefore, this is an overhype. Let's get the economy back on. I think that pressure is going to build. We have another 5.2 million people signing up for unemployment. I think Trump has tapped into something.
It was just to clarify that it was indeed Governor Whitmer who tried to tie Betsy DeVos specifically to the protest this week. And as Rosemary notes, there is really no evidence that the secretary is linked to it.
May I interject here? I actually have a... And by the way, Rosemary and I are complete agreement on there is no bottom on what this man will say regarding women in any way at all. Rosemary and I, we could have a fine time on that for several hours. Nevertheless, going back to your subject.
But we only have 30 seconds, but go ahead.
This thing that's going on in Michigan and the fact that it may spread, we have seen this kind of willful ignorance spread already. We've saw it through 16, and we've seen it every day since then with people actually voting against their own self-interest. People getting into a crowd knowing that a crowd will cause coronavirus to argue that people shouldn't get into a crowd. I mean, what could be more nonsensical than that? On the other hand,
I'm going to pause you there, Linda. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, and Linda Ellerbe. Linda, I cut you off. We had to go to British people talking about the news.
Right.
But we were talking about Michigan. Go ahead.
Yeah, I first of all, I'm sorry I missed your quite lovely cue that I had 30 seconds to finish and didn't
pay
attention to it. In any event, no, something has happened in the last 2 weeks that has changed my mind a great deal and has given me more hope than anything else. I think we have reached a tipping point in this country. I think we have finally reached that tipping point. And I think one of the reasons that persuaded me this was so was Wisconsin. People risk their lives to go out and vote and stand up and say no to Donald Trump. They risk their lives. Think about that. I believe that this man is going down big time in November. I do think we've reached that point. Could it go the other way? Well, anything is possible, of course. But honest to God, I really think now that we're on the right direction.
Bob, what do you think about that?
You know, Linda, I think you're really on to something. And while the press really cues into the MAGA crowd, and again, going back to Michigan, you know, the chanting "lock her up" is out of the Trump rally playbook. But what I think you're capturing is the rest of society may not be out in the streets acting like a fool, but we're angry. We're really angry, and it's not just the commentators on the show or the listeners on the show. You know, the government has failed us, and this administration has failed us. And I do think that there is a resolve in the communities, and it is going to lead to some surprises at the ballot box. And if I was a Republican senator, I would be really nervous right now.
Rosemary, do you agree?
No, I still have feelings of doom. It discourages me when I see polls. I know it's going the other way right now, but there are still huge numbers of people who approve of what he's doing in managing the coronavirus epidemic. And that alone to me is a symbol of the corruption. Look at where those contracts are going and to whom, and to the incompetence of this administration. If voters cannot even see that, then what hope is there? And those numbers have remained so constant, despite the economy has now tanked. We've been to the edge of war. He has been impeached. All the things that we thought, oh, when that happens, then we'll see a change. We have not. His support is steadfast and strong. There are huge efforts underway in this country to suppress the votes of people who, as Bob and Linda point out, are getting increasingly angry. So we don't even know that their votes will be counted. I think email voting is going to be a mess. I think anything could happen. So, no, I'm not giving up my pessimism yet.
And Alan, you have at least to this point been pretty optimistic as far as a Trump defeat in the fall.
I certainly have. From January 1st on, I've been saying that the Senate would flip, that the president would be defeated soundly. I think when we take a look, I love Linda's point about Wisconsin, of which, as you all know, I'm an expert, and I that's a joke. I just wrote a book all those years ago about it. All I can say is Linda's right. You know, when a lowly Supreme Court question goes on the ballot, and overwhelmingly, the least favorite, the liberal, wins in Wisconsin, that's a sign something's coming.
And Rosemary, I think it's okay that I understand that you're trying to, you know, that it's sometimes easier to be a little pessimistic and protect yourself. But I think the currents run a lot deeper than that we're able to pick up in polls. If anything that I learned from 2016 is that I'm not sure we know how to poll correctly in this modern connected society. And I do think that, you know, for every suburban family that right now is sitting there with their, you know, with their children You know, and having watched Frozen for the 96th time, if Chris Churchill's listening, I do think there's enough is enough, and this clownish, boorish behavior that we all thought that maybe the position would knock the edges off of Trump. It's not going to change. But you know, that's because he came in incompetent and has only gotten worse.
And because
one thing I've learned from this show is that when the polls are with you, you cite polls as proof of your position. When the polls are against you, you say, "Oh, the polls don't mean anything." And I think that's what we're doing now.
Well, I got to jump in on this one. We're going to go back to 2016 because, and I take no pride in having said in that Thanksgiving 2015 that if Donald Trump ran, he would be elected. But the reason, Rosemary, that I said so is that I said people are going to lie to the polls. They are going to lie to the polls. There are more racists in this country than will ever admit they are racist to a pollster. There are more men who don't like a bossy woman, much less a woman boss, in this country than who will ever say so to a pollster. So nobody should believe the polls because everybody's going to lie to the polls, and everybody did.
And with that said, Linda, she's still got 3 million more votes. The pollsters
won. Exactly. She won. This is the best time of all to keep going back to. And I understand, Rosemary, I understand your feelings. I get up just about every other day with this sort of heavy mental weight on my shoulder. I'm opening up my iPad to start reading the news while peeking through my fingers because I don't want to see what it is.
You know, Alan made the point a few moments ago of being the only person on the panel who has written a book about the Wisconsin legislature. Linda, I believe you were the only only person on our panel who Donald Trump tried to pick up.
That's quite possible, yes. one of the few times I can point to having had good sense enough to say no.
Whoa, tell us a story. What happened?
Oh, Alan, you've heard the story. This is back when I was working at Channel 2, hang on.
So Channel 2 in New York, CBS.
That is a throat clearing. Years ago, back in the early 70s, and he would call me every night after the show. We did our show on a newsroom set, and he would talk to me on the phone, and he would ask me out. And I would always say no. And then cut to about 10 years later, and I'm at a dinner party at the president of NYU, and we get to the dinner table, and I have already, being a journalist, I've already gone in and checked the name tags to see who I'm sitting next to at the dinner table. So I knew who I wasn't sitting next to, and it wasn't Donald Trump. But when we got in there, somehow his tag had been changed, and it was next to mine.
Oh.
And in the conversation that followed, he said this, which kind of, it tells you everything you need to know. He said, "See what a mistake you made in not going out with me 10 years ago?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "If you had gone out with me back then, you today could have been Mrs. the Donald."
Oh.
Oh. Oh God! I feel like I need a shower right now.
Uh-huh.
but Joe, I can confirm that the President Trump has never tried to date me. Although I don't understand why he wouldn't want a piece of this. But
well, of course, man. Well, it's sudden show suddenly taking a turn, hasn't it? Let me go to some letters. We'll clear the palette here, and we'll go to Reed, who says, "Wow, what a panel today! A great panel. If I need to be in this national foxhole, I want to be with you all." Then Dorothy says, "What about the Russians? There is evidence of the Russian hacking and tweaking of voter rolls in individual states' voter rolls in 2016 is what won the election. Though the Senate chooses to not address this, is there no way to prevent the same exact thing in the coming presidential election? Why are we ignoring this?" Rosemary, you have been going on about this for a while.
Yeah, this is the whole Cambridge Analytica effort to pinpoint voters of a certain type, a certain tendency. The thing that the polls missed, they went after, and they were targeted vote wooing in the target states. It was definitely an electoral college-driven campaign. And nothing since 2015, since the last election, has changed. There is no new law, no new regulation. And while the analytics has gone out of business, Cambridge Analytics is no longer around, there is that same expertise, and Donald Trump is probably employing it. And I bet Joe Biden is not. The Democrats tend to play fair. They take that stupid high road, and nothing has been done to change it. So I think that we're as vulnerable now as we were then. And the voter suppression has now gone out into the open. It's all reasons for my pessimism. I don't see this as a really fair election. Or at least we have no guarantees of it.
We have a letter from listener Bob to panelist Bob saying, since you have an expert on this topic today, I have a question. Is there a secure way to vote electronically, either by phone or computer, perhaps an app with a personally unique QR code? So many millennials and younger people live their lives that way. It could encourage them all to vote. Also, in this time of COVID, it would allow for physical distance voting. Let me know. Thank you all for being on the air. Bob.
Oh, sorry, Joe. The answer is absolutely yes, it's something that I've always felt that the federal government should have been pouring a lot of money into post 2016, regardless of the outcome, just because starting to update how we vote and how we move our Democratic Republic into the digital age, I think is absolutely critical. I read an article today that the SATs and ACTs are now going online, and good Lord, if they can go online and have a secure, safe system, I know the voting system can as well.
All right. Dan writes to us and says, Linda is right. The media is always a day behind because Trump's strategy is to drop a new bomb each day. He knocks reporters back on their heels so they won't be prepared to ask questions immediately. The next day, they've done their homework and are ready to pick up the previous day's hot topic.
But we were just attacked.
But Trump dismisses them and moves on to a new bomb.
Gosh, that sounds smarter than anything I said.
All right. We will take a break. We will be right back. Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, Linda Ellerbe, and Alan Chartok. We will return right after this.
Sucky, my baby, sucky.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, Bob Griffin, and Linda Ellerbe. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We go to letters. Maureen said he lost. I'm not sure I understand this letter, but I'm going to read it as it's written, and then we can see if it makes sense to any of you. Panel is saying people should remember that Hillary won by 3 million votes. Louder voices should be saying he lost. That would get more attention. Love the show. Listen on my app every day.
Oh, I think she just means that if you attach Hillary's name to anything, that it's a downer and people dislike you. So it's better to say he lost than to say she won.
I see. But he's still president.
Mary, am I right on that one?
It makes sense. I didn't really get the letter, but I also don't believe in women being quiet about Hillary's name. She's an amazing woman. Our failure was not teaching our younger sisters about what she went through and what she really represents, I think. And so I'm going to say over and over again, I think she's great. She should be president right now. We'd be in a much better place.
Daisy writes there. Are so many great voting rights groups that are on the front lines. Fair Fight and others are working hard to protect us, and I believe they will. To Rosemary's point, I think about what Malcolm says. His supporters are a cult. That cult is alive and well, but the other side is stronger than that cult now.
Joe, I really think that is absolutely spot on. And the way that we overcome all of the obstacles that this cult is trying to throw at us is by turning out in the election. And this goes back to Linda's comments about the hope that Wisconsin has given to the rest of the country. We can overcome this, and we can put a government in place that will do the things that we as the people want them to do.
I'm not sure that calling 40% of Americans a cult is a lot better than calling 50% of them deplorables. What about coming together? Yeah, their devotion is cult-like, but that means they're going to go out and vote, and their votes are not going to be suppressed. These are white, working-class, middle American
actually,
voters.
Actually, Rosemary, I think there might be one area where they'll be surprising.
When?
We've all talked about this sort of 40% as staying the same. And we all tend to refer to that as the quote, I use this in quotes, cult supporters, the base, his base. But what we ignore in that, and I am a native Texan, and I admit that I have friends who feel this way, who say, he is a jerk. He is a terrible man, but I am voting my fortune in the stock market, and therefore I'm going to vote for him, and I don't care what kind of human being he is. That part
okay, that's
of that
deplorable.
40% base, Rosemary, may not stay with him.
And Rosemary, what would you call it? It's a group of people that are wedded to the personality, not the policies. It's not a traditional policy decision or taking a position on something you really care about. I mean, this is as much just about that people find this caricature fascinating and like what he's like
and
how he's
entertaining
screwing
and
with
they
the
want
comfort.
More of it. They've never
Amen.
Been as aggressive in politics.
If I may, let me just say that I think it is true that the Trump won, especially in those couple of states that he won in, because people were sick and tired of the same old, same old. I think that's the case. And I don't think Hillary did enough to talk about why she would have been a better president and having gone to those states. But okay, let's lay that aside. But I do think now that we are in a situation where a lot of those people who voted for Trump have given it up. They're not going to vote for him again. I think Linda's right. I think it's going to be overwhelmingly anti-Trump. I think he's had his time. And I truly believe from everybody I'm talking to, and I'm talking to a lot of Trumpers who say, or former Trumpers who say they're not going to do it again. So
yeah.
I think she'll lose.
Yeah, Linda, you know, when you talk about those Texans, when they see the stock market, I mean, we had some leveling off, and then the last yesterday was awful, and today is already down 150 points, 200 points. So if this continues, if that momentum continues, what do you think their reaction will be?
I believe that they then look at that and they go, okay, he is not doing great for my parking, for my own fortune. Let's perhaps, say, take on some other things, like, for example, upholding the Constitution. Something like that, something not as important as your own fortune, but maybe somewhere in your list of priorities.
and maybe there are seeds of patriotism and nation before party that could grow. Alan, back to your comment, which I think is both on spot but dangerous, that the only way this happens, though, is that if people continue to stay involved and vote, you can't take a single election for granted. And people need to be motivated, and they need to be prepared to stand in line or deal with any obstacle that's put in front of them, because their vote is what makes the change.
I agree.
That's what saw in Wisconsin. And that's what worries me when you talk about online voting and, gee, can't we make this a way so it works? You know what? It already works, but most of the millennials didn't seem to feel compelled to do it.
Mm. I just want to say in response to Bob's very good point, I think elections are won or lost by which side is the most excited, most ready to move. And I think in this case, it's the anti-Trumpers who have it all. We saw the House of Representatives go dramatically to the Democrats. We saw the Wisconsin example that you're just talking about. I'm sorry, Rosemary, but we're seeing the polls. And the polls, whether or not you like them or not, are indicating that the president is in real trouble. And you see his desperation right now, as Linda's pointed out. His desperation right now is getting more and more pronounced because he knows what's coming. So I think this is a bad time for this president.
We have letter.
Well, I sincerely hope that you all are right, and there may be something about being the lone pessimist in this group of rosy optimists that makes me contrarian here, but I'm not seeing it. I think the enthusiasm of the pro-Trumpers is solid and demonstrated every day at rallies, in letters to Republican senators who have held the line for him. I think his people are very happy with what he's delivered in terms of judges. And as far as the Constitution, that's a civics class that most people don't take anymore. He's smart enough to say, Article 2 gives me full power. He's quoting from our own Constitution, and most of the people watching TV are not listening to the analysts and the constitutional lawyers at MSNBC and the rest bring out later saying, oh, no, he's full of crap. They're hearing the President of the United States up there and all the trapping of that power quoting the Constitution. They have no idea that he's ripping it apart.
Jonathan writes, the most dangerous thing we can do now is to discount the Trumpian danger by thinking he is washed up. He's as cunning as a fox and will find any way to inflame his base. In other words, long time
absolutely.
Between now and November.
Yeah.
John.
I agree with that.
John says, Bob, if I can send my tax return securely online, why can't I vote online?
And that's exactly the point I was getting to from the earlier letter, Joe. The capacity is there. The ability to have secure systems are there. And I've always felt that this is a great way to expand participation in our elections. I've also always been a strong component, and you make it as easy as possible for people to vote. So I'm a huge proponent of a mass effort to update how we vote and access
and yet, to voting. And yet, Bob, the other side of that is they know it. They know exactly what you're up to. They know that the more people who vote, they is the Republicans, the more likely it is that a Democrat is going to win, and they will do everything in their power to put a stop to that.
You know, and I think you're right, and I think Rosemary's right too. That his base is committed to him. I don't think they're committed to Republican ideals. I think it is just about Trump, and Rosemary, I just don't think there's enough of them, and maybe I'm being. The glass half full, which is typically not, you know, I'm a professional paranoid. I'm not an optimistic guy normally, but I do sense a change in the wind.
I would love for there not to be enough. I mean, but that's what Bernie said. The millennials will come out and vote for me. That's what what many a Democrat has said in the special elections since 2016, that this will change and we'll bring out the other votes. But it hasn't happened so far, and Republicans are working.
Well, it did happen.
Really,
it happened
really
in 2018 in the midterms. It didn't happen for Bernie, but that has more to do with Bernie than the Democratic Party, of which he is not a member. It did happen
right.
In 2018. People went out and they voted, and they did the right thing, Rosemary.
And Rosemary, voter suppression.
I agree. There was a difference, but I mean, one election does not make a trend, as you know. So my
that's
my
true.
Pessimism
but I'm the one that in 2016 went around saying Trump's going to win, and I was the only little girl doing that, and I was right, and everybody else was wrong. So. I'm where you are now. I was hoping to be wrong. I am hoping this time to be right, and you're wrong.
Yes, I want that too, believe me.
Before we get flooded with letters, Joe, real quickly.
Oh, we're already flooded with letters, but go ahead.
Okay, we can't blame the millennials for everything. I mean, the issue of voting and not voting is not just a millennial issue. There are whole segments of society that are impacted by this, and I think it's too easy to scapegoat the millennials. And I can tell you from my own kids and the great students that I deal with. They're smart. They're hardworking. They're dedicated to this country. And sometimes I think they get this crap thrown on them.
Okay, I'm calling baloney on that. They are the largest demographic, and it is on them. They could beat the boomers. They could beat everybody if they only voted. And no matter how smart and dedicated they are, if you don't vote, you have no voice. And that's what's happening.
I'm with Rosemary on that completely. And instead of
me
blaming
too.
The
me
millennials
too.
For everything, I would like to see the millennials stop saying, okay, boomer.
Blame it a lot on the boomers.
Things that we did, I'd be happy to provide it. And we didn't do it living in our parents' basements and not going out and voting.
you were making a similar point yesterday, Alan.
Yeah, no, I've been saying all along, because I spent 40 years, you know, teaching, and I talked to a lot of students, and they always swore they would go out, because they knew where I stood, they would go out and vote, and they didn't. And now everybody says, well, this year is different. I'm with Rosemary on this one. Boy, it really, you know, never mind.
It is easy, Bob, but it's also correct.
Talking to the millennials, I'm feeling really embarrassed that I wasted my time.
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's it, because those were your kids, right?
They were my kids. They were the ones we talked to. We really thought that we were really interesting young people, getting them interested in democracy early. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
okay, you're not helping my pessimism.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a wonderful panel: Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, and Linda Ellerbe. We will continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel in the 10 o'clock hour, 6 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, and Linda Ellerbe with us this morning. And again, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We have a number of letters.
Hey, Joe, before you get to the letter, can I just make one final comment
on
millennials?
Of course.
Okay. You know, what bugs me is we don't blame old people for electing Trump and screwing up the country. We don't blame white suburban women for voting Trump into office and screwing up the country.
Yeah, we
do. And, you know, I think we don't, though. And, you know, and we may not like the term, you know, okay, boomers, because it's a wonderful cutting comment, but we've done a real disservice to our children and grandchildren. If you think about school debt, you think about the impossibility of buying houses. If you think about how badly we've screwed up the environment for them, I don't know. I just think that we fall into a trap of sort of blaming one group for that last election. So
I mean, didn't we?
Yeah, I'll just leave it
Bob,
at that.
Bob, I think you're pandering to your son and his crowd who listens to the program.
Oh, boy.
And yes, we have done poorly by our college-age students, but who has more at stake to go vote than those kids who are facing the inability to buy and participate in the economy because of debt?
And it is not only the young people who are responsible. It's everybody. There's no question about it. But in larger numbers, larger percentages, the young people are responsible. And while I have the microphone for a moment, Joe, if I may, and if you'll indulge me.
Yes,
when a lot of people are listening to this program, and I'm very proud that we called for it, we all invented it together, that we expanded it twice, and it's here. And now's the time, because we are facing a severe. We were talking to Jordan Yaxall, our wonderful CFO this morning, and we are facing a severe cut in what we have to spend this year. So everybody, if you can go to WAMC Radio and say, even if it's $5, I'm with you. I would really appreciate that. We got to fill up that lockbox, because I don't think we're going to be able to have a fun drive this time, and there certainly won't be 800 pairs of tickets from Tanglewood and the rest of it. It's going to come down to us, the same people who decided we needed to own that tower on top of Mount Greylock and did an amazing $2 million fund drive in the same day we do everything else. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just asking friends, go to the WAMC.org and put something in. Thanks, Joe.
WAMC.org. All right. We have a lot of letters. They're sort of all over the place, so we'll just go through. And I think you all get praised and smacked down at least once in this litany of letters, so let me begin. Why is Rosemary the only one with her head on straight? We have to fix the elections. There is no unhackable way to vote electronically. It would require too many people on the chain of trust. Dear panel, the fact that you think the protesters are all big Trump fans shows how out of touch you have become. My hat is off to them, and I can't stand Trump. We have become sheep. Our government declares a national emergency, and suddenly our rights in the Constitution are thrown out the window. The Michigan governor is way out of line and has it coming to her. Well,
oh my goodness.
I mean, if you looked at that, I don't know what pictures Joanne saw from that rally last night in Michigan, but there were a great number, I think a majority, right, of Don't Tread on Me flags, Trump flags, MAGA hats.
MAGA hats. It's the red hats that give them away. They're Trumpers.
Maybe not all, but a great number, I would think, it's safe to say. But, okay.
If we can generalize about millennials, we probably can generalize about protest goers.
Well, and it goes to Bob, to your point earlier, which I think is interesting. You know, you were saying that you know there were some concerns about those restrictions in Michigan.
Absolutely, and there are areas like I find it inconceivable that they actually closed aisles in stores because what they were selling in those aisles are non-essential. You know, come on, there's got to be a little bit of common sense there. There is no right in the Constitution to make everybody else around you sick and potentially die either. I mean, a pandemic is a very, very different situation. And finally, I gotta get back into this. I'm not pandering, Rosemary. If I didn't believe in my heart that this next generation is wonderful, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing at the university. I do think they're wonderful, and I do think they catch much more crap than anybody else. So I'm not pandering. It is something that I absolutely, completely believe in. And not only that, why the hell would I pander? It's not like I'm running for anything.
Whoa, this is good.
Yeah, this is good. By the way, I'm not going to out anybody, and I don't want to know, but somebody is dealing with pots and pans, and if you could stop that, that would be great. Okay.
It ain't me, I can tell you that much.
No.
I don't know about pots and pans.
Alan often asks about when are we going to get our pots and pans and go out into the streets, and apparently we're getting ready for that. Rosemary, would you like to respond to Mr. Griffin?
No, I don't mean to insult him. I just think he's wrong, and if he's wrong and sincerely wrong, that's cool.
Yeah, that's all right. Thanks. Rosemary, I do love you. I really do, although I do miss Chris Churchill because usually he's the one that's catchy, that's not me.
This is from Alan to Alan. What were people sick of during the Obama years? A recovering economy and better access to health care? Alan says the electorate was sick of this same old. Well, I think you were talking about the Clintons, right?
Oh, come on. He knows. Listen, this Alan writes to me quite frequently.
Okay.
Look, the answer is he knows very well there was a difference between what people thought of Obama and what people thought of Hillary Clinton. Obama would have easily been elected to a third term, no question, if the Constitution had permitted it. There was something, Rosemary has spoken about this at great length. It may be misogyny, it may be other things, but there was something about Hillary that turned off crucial segments of the society. And only in those states, as I have said again and again and again, she won. She beat him by 3 million votes. It's that simple.
Dick says, Alan is right on. I hated Trump and Clinton in 2016. I voted Jill Stein after Bernie in the primary. I voted Bernie in the 2020 primary. But I will crawl to the polls in my gloves and my mask to vote Biden, our only chance to dump Trump.
And that, can I just say that that is what this election is all about. It's not how many people will vote. It is about how many people will vote. It is about which side of this line, the pro or the anti-Trump group, are most excited right now. And I'm telling you, I feel it in my bones. People want this guy out of there.
Okay. We have a lot of pro millennial letters, so I'll get to those. Margarita says, how can you not see that saying millennials live in their parents' basement is alienating and divisive? It lowers the quality of the discourse. All right.
It was meant as a joke. Let me just leave it at that.
Roshni says, thank you to Bob for defending the millennials, and it's about time. I don't know what millennials you are talking to, but the ones I know are vehemently politically active. Constantly.
Rosemary. We always get those letters, after we have this discussion, and they always say, my son is going to vote. It is the aggregate.
Right.
It is not individuals.
Correct.
So Roshni goes on and says, constantly putting down millennials with comments like they live in their parents' basement when so many millennials have 50% more student debt than Gen X is not going to help get millennial support. Also, according to Pew in 2014, baby boomers are still the number one voting bloc. Don't turn millennials off from the...
No, by numbers, millennials have now surpassed the boomers. That's absolutely true. And it's what Bob says is true, that we owe them, not just because they're our children in the future, but because it's good for the whole economy, for our kids to come out of school educated and debt-free. It helps the whole economy when that's true, and that's why boomers need to vote. But why? How does that let millennials off the hook? It's their own lies. It's their futures themselves, and they're not voting. It's not on the boomers this time.
Well, you know, Rosemary makes a very good point here. And, you know, I have very little faith in people who say you shouldn't be talking about this because it
right.
will help lose the election. Come on, that's right. not what this program is all about. If Rosemary says this is what's happening and these kids aren't voting, hey, it's information that makes things change. You know,
And Alan, you know what? If we went the other way and said, okay, we're going to do everything we can to boost the millennial vote and change the election, what would we be doing? What would we be doing? Bernie already tried that and it didn't work. What else could anybody outside of yourself do to get you to vote? Hold a gun to your head. Kind of undemocratic.
Not that.
But this program is an informational program. If Rosemary says they're not doing it, it's not up to her to shut up, not to tell the truth. It's ridiculous.
And Alan, if I could jump in, I agree with you. And it's not that I'm not asking the millennials to come out to vote. I'm asking everybody to come out to vote. And right. you know, even people who I may disagree with. And if at the end of the day, more of those people say, you know, I want to go in this direction and I wish they went in another direction, that's the direction we go. And I'm not one who will ever say that Trump isn't my president. He is the president. I mean, he's not my choice. But he is the president. So I'm sorry that I sort of took this conversation sort of down a rat's nest, because I feel like I've taken
Thanks,
away from
Bob.
Yeah, I know, really taken away from some of the really major issues about a guy who is moving this country towards a despotism. I feel like sometimes that this is crap from a banana republic dictator, and that's I'm sorry if I didn't mean to take that off, but everybody needs to vote, everybody.
Joanne said,
and
go
and
ahead,
you're
Linda.
Not off issue. I mean, you're really not off issue. Who votes, who doesn't vote, and why they do and why they don't vote has everything to do with the issue at hand.
Good
Let's
point.
Go to Joanne's letter, who says, "Dear panel, the fact that you think they... I already said that one. I'm sorry. My apologies. I put it in the wrong folder. Here we go. Tracy says, when Trump loses the election, he'll turn around and say, if I really wanted to win, I would have, but I decided that I didn't want to have a second term. That's how warped his mind is. Well, I think there's a long time between that point and where we are now. Eric says, the founding fathers never intended the president to be able to adjourn Congress so the executive branch could have unlimited power. It's outrageous. I thought the Republican Party was the party of small government.
So
and
so,
state rights.
Yeah. So
it
then
is
the
small, one king.
Yeah, well, yeah, but then the question is, the Mitch McConnells who love the judicial nominations and all the rest of it, do those guys go along with allowing this? What's the right word here? What's the right adjective? This megalomaniac to take the power of the United States Senate away from them and out of their hands, or as Mr. Welch said to Joe McCarthy, have you no shame?
Well, I think as long as you can do away with Medicare and Social Security, that there's a great deal of the Republican Party be just fine mm-hmm. to give up the Constitution.
Yeah, you may be right.
We go to, we go to Elaine, who says, dear panel, can we please stop ranting about Trump? Been there, done that. Can we talk about Biden and how he could be relevant and visible? Read his op-ed plan, quote unquote, for handling the COVID economic recovery. Thought I was reading an eighth grader's last minute homework assignment. Then I read Elizabeth Warren's specific, clear, proactive and actionable plan. Why can't Biden try that?
She was terrific on Rachel Maddow last night, asked if she would respond positively if invited to be the vice president's handle with Biden. She had a one word answer. It was yes. So although Kamala Harris is my first choice, I think it should be a woman of color. But I do think that Warren will be involved one way or another. another in the next government coming in if it's not Trump.
So here's a letter we wanted to get in today. As a child, this is from Jan. As a child of the 60s, I've worked and waited long and hard to see a woman as VP or president. But right now, it's far more important for me to see Trump gone. So please let Biden pick a running mate that gives us the best odds for winning, and we can go back to righting the world in 2024. We need votes to defeat him, to survive, and most of all, to stop the hate and cruelty. Linda Ellerbe.
I'm so glad that woman said that. Thank you, ma'am. You speak for me. I am a 75-year-old woman who would like nothing better than to see a female take the oath of office. My daughter, my granddaughter, and I had plans to go to Washington for the inauguration of Hillary Clinton, should it have taken place. We did not. And as much as I want to see this, I very much wish that Joe Biden had not said, I promise to appoint a woman. I think it was short-sighted. I think what we need right now is the very first best person for the job, and that may or may not be a woman. And I speak as a woman. I would rather have the best person for the job in this case than have a woman.
Who is that?
Rosemary.
I'm not going to say who it is to me. I'm just going to tell you the name that is on everybody's lips all over this country because I have friends all over this country. And you all know what it is, too. And Joe comes on a distant third and even getting talked about. You know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the governor of the state of New York.
Andrew Cuomo.
And he's been super impressive and showed the type of leadership and empathy during a disaster.
Politically. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Bob.
No, I was just saying that, I think the governor has shown the type of empathy and leadership that you need after a crisis. And even though I disagree like with Giuliani now and I appreciate that type of leadership and bringing the country together. Interesting thing about Biden, I do think he's been too quiet. But I also think that he's an opportunity actually to reach out to even moderate Republicans and bring them into a coalition that can help repair the damage to this country.
I know Rosemary doesn't believe in polls the way that I do, because I think they are snapshots. I think they're temporary. But I'm telling you now, the fact that the polls are showing Biden is on the right track. He is, as you have just suggested, he's a moderate. That's what the American people want. They don't want Trumpism. They've had enough of it. So I think you make a very strong point. Why fool with success?
Rosemary?
Well, I've made the point before. I'm not sure that I need to say it again. He did promise that it would be a woman. And being the woman and being the best are not mutually exclusive. And I think that he can come up with a strong winning ticket without breaking his promise.
Jeff says, Rosemary is right. I've listened to the panel for years and have often heard the over-the-top optimism before. Remember the Access Hollywood tape? Remember collusion? There are too many to list. Do I need to go on? Rosemary is right. Don't underestimate Trump's power.
I couldn't agree more. Rosemary is right about that. We shouldn't. But on the other hand, I think all the evidence is that Biden is doing better and better and better, and Trump is doing worse and worse and worse. And, you know, you can say that's not true, but it is true.
Raphael writes, dear lovely insanity saving panel, can you tell me what's going on with the U.S. Postal Service? Is Trump really trying to privatize it, close it down? Question mark. Why? Question mark.
His feud with Bezos. He's had a bone to pick with them for years. They clearly and totally should be in the recovery acts that are being discussed in Congress, and I hope Democrats will stand up for it.
Bob?
I do think that there is a large segment, particularly of the more far right, that would love to see the post office go away because they view it as just more useless government spending, and that the private sector could do it better.
As Mario used to say, it's a socialist institution. That's why they don't like it. The truth is, I don't know that he really wants to close it up. I know he thinks that it's on people's minds, and it's one more distraction.
Distraction from what?
distraction from his being a jerk.
it's all part and parcel of the same thing. I don't know if it's a distraction.
You mean regarding coronavirus?
No. My point was, Rosemary, for whatever it's worth, that he raises these subjects to deflect from his own ineptitude. Mm. That's what it's all about. So I don't always know whether he really means it or whether it's just convenient for him to throw one more cherry bomb into the mix.
Yeah, get to be on top of the news again. Mm-hmm.
All right. That was Raphael. Chris says, one of the problems for young people voting is where they are allowed to vote. If we would vote online, they could all vote in their home district from college. Another problem that exists, say my daughter living in Brazil, she gets her absentee ballot in the mail from the election board in our country, and she can't get it back on time. There should be voting as many ways as we can provide, including absentee ballot, in-person, and voting online. I can't imagine there would be a person on the panel who disagrees with that.
Well, to which I would say, if the right now, the Republicans, who know that if you expand the franchise, you don't win. The Republicans lose to the Democrats because there are so many more Democrats, and they are a larger group that don't vote. I'm almost sick of saying it. But now, let's assume that the Democrats take the United States Senate, have the House of Representatives, and the presidency. You'll see voting reforms like you've never seen before.
We have two more letters on millennials. Steve says the millennials have been out of college for years. The youngest is currently 24. The oldest is 39. The panel is lumping today's students as well as recent graduates in with this older generation. James make a similar point. Let's remember that the college students you are dealing with are not, in fact, millennials. They are Generation Z.
Well, yeah, that's not true. We know what millennials are, and those young people in their 20s and 30s are having the financial problems that come with our whole college debt problems in this country. So I don't think that we're making a mistake, and the college students are lumped in with the rest of the millennials. It's a group that is not voting. It's not just the young people.
Yeah,
and I would also say that it's true. We have terrible laws on voting. I've frequently said just having it on a Tuesday is unfair to a lot of people, including college students. But it's the situation, and millennials need to face that too as part of the responsibility. You have to take some inconvenience to vote. We're in a country where people died to vote. So it's not asking all that much to figure out how to get your ballot into the U.S. Embassy in Brazil fast enough to be counted.
Bob?
A couple of points. One is that I agree that we are lumping. We do have a tendency to lump together, but in my mind, I can link clearly the issue of unaffordable college tuitions with unaffordable housing that leads to a bleakness right. about what your future is. And so I think the letter was correct, and I haven't sort of split those demographics maybe as neatly as we could. And going back to the question of voting, you know, what I'd like to see is the same privileges that the military who are deployed across the globe have in voting. I think we all should have that ability.
Linda?
I'm actually in agreement with every one of you here. Voting comes with some obligations. It's not just a right. I don't have a lot of patience with people who say, well, it was difficult for me to get that vote in the mail. I had to jump through hoops myself to vote this year simply because last year I moved states and one of the states forgot to tell the other state, and it was kind of iffy in that, but I managed. You know, I managed because that's what you do in order to vote. And I don't have a lot of patience with people who say, well, you know, I just can't vote while playing my video game, so therefore I'm not going to vote, or I'm supposed to go stand in the rain to do this, or I forgot to register, or I didn't know how to register, or I was home the day they taught history. One of my problems with this is that it's not these students' fault as much as it is that they are not being taught American history. And I learned this for the 25 years of anchoring Nick News. When we had kids come who were in high school who still thought that the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were one document. So I have to cut the millennials some slack. I listened to them for years. And if the fault is in anything, it's in mine and not explaining better the importance of voting and that it's a little hard sometimes, but it's still necessary. I let them down. We let them down. We as boomers let them down, and now they're letting us down.
And, right. And Linda, you obviously have never had a level 59 paladin that needs to be that needs to get to 60.
You know, the truth thing is, I'm just joking. I was born in 44. I'm a war baby.
And that's a very good point.
As a gamer, I like that analogy. Sorry.
All right.
That's a very good point. Because
20 seconds. Go ahead.
Because a lot of wars have been fought for the right to vote.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We'll have our last round, last call with our panel. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. It's a good one. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, and Linda Ellerbe. We will continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Last call, last go-round with this group, and I thank you very much for being with us. Panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We have some letters about the post office. Dave says, please consider the result of a postal disruption while an election by mail this fall is being considered. I think many have made that case, that point, that concern, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Interestingly, Elise Stefanik has become a supporter of the post office. Even in the midst of her Trump love, she's stood up for the post office. I applaud that.
On the grounds, which I thought was interesting, on the grounds of seniors getting their medication.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Interesting.
And Medicare checks go out.
Yes.
Through the post office. There's a whole bunch of reasons to support the post office beyond the jobs. Which are numerous.
How else can you get the Trump signed check? Richard says, U.S. has had pathetic voting record for decades. Denigrating current generation is scapegoating. We go to Philip, who says, as a millennial who grew up with Linda and Nick News, it definitely disappoints me that no one in my generation understands the importance of voting. It's my hope as a future social studies teacher to change that. Well, there you go, Linda. Yeah.
So he was the one. Tell him thanks.
Joe says, hey, Jefferson created the U.S. Post Office. Congress created the U.S. Postal Service, a quasi-governmental catastrophe. The federal government needs to appropriately fund the post office and stop destroying this very necessary government office.
Yes.
Mary Ellen is weighing in on Cuomo for VP. She says, no. There's nothing that Cuomo can do that Elizabeth can't do. Elizabeth has the character, brains, and experience that we need as VP. No more white men, says Mary Ellen.
That's extraordinary.
No more white men? No more white men?
Again,
we call that prejudice, don't we?
I'm just as you often say, Alan, you say them, we read them, right?
Yeah, we read them.
You write them, we read them.
No, I wasn't responding to you, believe me.
No, I know, just to the letter.
No more white men? Just try that with any other color. No more this man, no more that woman. Come on.
Go ahead, Bob.
I do hope that Biden sticks to his promise because I think it's overdue and it's time. And I would love to see Cuomo, frankly, as the attorney general or you know, back to my old home, DHS, which both of which need good leadership and strong hands and are so critical to our society. So and no matter what, I think the governor could play a huge role on the federal national stage.
We have a letter from Ellen, and this is for Rosemary. And Rosemary, we've been doing this a long time. I don't remember you saying this, so if you did, then I don't know. But here we go.
Okay.
Would Rosemary please explain why she thinks that Joe Biden should pick a senator for VP than rather a governor?
I didn't. I wanted to be a woman. That's all. A woman governor, a woman senator.
Well, and I think you did say Kamala Harris, but that wasn't.
We're hot on governors right now because of their important role in fighting the virus, which the federal government is not doing. And, of course, there are other at least two women I can think of who are qualified on that score, Andrew Cuomo. So, no, I don't care about the senator or governor thing.
We do have a little problem. We do have a little problem here in Massachusetts. If Elizabeth Warren runs and wins as the vice president, the Republican governor gets to appoint.
Right. A replacement. That's a problem.
That's a problem. Now, you could, of course, get around that by getting this Republican, which is what Governor Baker is. He's, you know, he's very popular. To agree.
We have another little problem, too. If Elizabeth Warren couldn't get enough primary votes to get the nomination, why does anybody think she's going to bring enough votes to the ticket to put Joe over the top?
Good point.
Well, there's that, too. Let's see. I want to go to, we haven't talked about the WHO funding fallout, and we did yesterday, of course, but there has been, obviously, fallout from it, and it has caused great concern around the world. President Trump's public campaign against the WHO and his order to freeze all money to the group in the middle of the pandemic is the culmination of mounting anger among his White House advisors, Republican lawmakers, and conservative news media about the organization's lavish praise of China's response to the coronavirus. Mr. Trump's decision to attack the WHO, a unit of the United Nations, comes as he is under intense fire at home for his administration's failure to respond aggressively to the virus, which as of Wednesday had claimed more than 25,000 lives in the United States and infected over 600,000 people. There are cases in all 50 states. That is from the New York Times. Bob Griffin.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting point, and I think it's pandering. I think he's, again, pandering to his base, and when I hear White House officials, I mean, so Jared doesn't like the WHO? I mean, the WHO, I mean, because that seems to be the only White House official that Trump listens to. I also find it really interesting that not only this anti-United Nations bend, but this sort of going after China piece, because I do wonder, you know, if we are going to get our economy back on, get on track, I mean, trade is going to be really important, and trade with China is going to be really important. So, you know, there are a lot of elements here, but I don't know who in the White House he's listening to. I would also go back to something that was said really early in the show, that I do see this as just another smokescreen to hide the fact that we have that we've flubbed the pandemic response.
Rosemary?
Okay, I think that, yes, that's partly true. It's someone else to blame, but it also fits in with the Trumpian and Republican idea that the UN is bad and everything connected with it is bad. And so they pulled funding. I'm furious at the WHO's response. The director got out and said, oh, we're very dismayed. We're disappointed. I'm sorry. He should be out there with numbers and proof of what happens when you let health in Africa go crazy. It affects the United States. If he's really thinking of America first, he's not doing a good job of it to let Africa and Asia go into health crises. And he also isn't providing them that lavish praise. What did he say? What did the WHO say compared to what Trump said? I want a side-by-side comparison. And none of that has come up. They have taken this diplomatic approach of, oh, we'll let this just pass and assuage the crazy man.
Not only that, you know, I watched his press conference there, and he was very clear about one thing. We're helping people all over the world. We're getting them ventilators. We're doing this. We're doing that. And by the way, we want to kill the WHO. You know, there seems to be something mildly uncomfortable about saying those in rapid succession. We're helping people all over the world. The one organization which has been set up to really help people, including the coming pandemic in Africa, that's what we want to get rid of. Unbelievable.
Linda.
Yep. Well, you know, there was an article last week, and I don't remember where I read it. It may have been the Times. It may not have been. But it talked about that never in the history of the world had so many scientists from so many countries come together to work on a single issue with such single-mindedness. Now, you put that up against a politician who says, you know, what I think we really need to do is ignore every scientific fact that's headed our way. I don't see this as a hard choice either way. I mean, I'm not saying that WHO is not political. Of course, it is. Any organization that has more than two people in it is political. But this is just another, as many of you have noted, another case of the Republicans saying, let's not trust intellect, let's not trust scientists, and let's not trust globalism.
And Joe, can I just one more thought on this?
Sure.
It also, you know, the response from the WHO actually, I thought was not surprising, but it also starts to show the incredible loss of American prestige, and more importantly, I think the moral compass that the United States was providing for the rest of the world for, frankly, for generations. And the span of a 3-year period, we have destroyed that. So we are still looked at as such a major player that nobody really wants to infuriate the American people and therefore the American president. But we have lost an awful lot of standing in the global community. And whether we like it or not, we're part of a global community.
Anyone else on that, Alan?
No, but I do want to go back to an earlier comment about Elizabeth Warren and about the vice presidency. I think she'd be terrific, but I think it's unfair to say she couldn't win the presidency or the nomination, therefore she shouldn't be vice president. There were an awful lot of other people who couldn't win the presidency either, many of whom are being considered for the vice presidency.
Anyone on that? Okay.
I think you make a very good point on that. And, Alan, frankly, it's one I hadn't considered. On the other hand, I think the reason that she didn't get more votes than she did was not that anybody necessarily thought her policies were terrible. It's that nobody thought she could beat Trump. And that part stays the same.
Yeah, she speaks for a particular demographic. You're exactly right. She's basically, we could only say, from the Bernie camp. And Bernie didn't win.
Right.
And so, you know, I think you make a good point.
So we have 3 minutes, and I'm going to sort of launch a huge issue here, but we can talk about it more tomorrow. But I'm just obviously much of the talk of the last few days has been about how we reopen the United States. And what is coming very, very clear is that almost everyone is saying that the country is not conducting nearly enough testing to track the path and the penetration of the coronavirus in a way that would allow Americans to return to work safely. And political leaders, some political leaders are saying this. Public health officials are saying this. We heard during the news that at the bottom of the hour that the president is expected to make his plan known today, which many are expecting to talk about May 1st as a going back to work day for many in this country. So let's just do a quick go around with everybody. Bob, what do you think?
I think that the biggest risk right now is actually opening up too early and then starting to look at a boomerang or a second wave. I think in this situation, I think a gradual reopening is the way it needs to go. Honestly, Joe, right now I'm keeping a tight eye on places like Denmark that are starting to open to see what happens. I do wish I had sort of better insight into what's occurring in China, because my sense from the little bit that I can glean is that there actually may be sort of a second wave happening in Wuhan. So I think as much as I understand people's desire to get back to life, I think it would be better to go slow right now and make sure we're doing it correctly than to go fast and all of a sudden make the situation worse.
Alan?
Yeah, look, it's not only the testing. It also is the question of what we know about this virus. We don't know enough. And I think Bob's point is extremely well taken. We don't know, in fact, if you can reinfect. We don't know any of that stuff. So it's not only the testing, but it is the properties of the virus itself that are so of such concern.
Linda?
Too soon. Very simple answer here. Go ask the people working the health care. Go ask the people in the hospitals. Go ask them if they think everything's ready to go back by May 1st. Stop asking the politicians. Ask the people in those hospitals.
Rosemary, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's true. 11,300 people died in New York yesterday. I'm not going into any stores that even do open, and I think a lot of people who are going to think of their parents and of their own health are going to think the same way. So let the politicians talk about any date they want. Remember Easter?
Right. Good point. All right. I want to thank everybody for being with us. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, and Linda Ellerbe, thank you all for being with us. You're all terrific. I appreciate it.